Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and today we're going inside writing again. Doing that a lot. Joining me as co-host is David North Martino.
Hi, Al.
I just want to say David Martini. Where's my martini?
Okay. I'm making cocktails right now as we speak.
Good, good. We're running behind here. We need a drink. If you go to Florida, they've already had their drink. So
absolutely,
I tell you, I just can't go over the world. It's just crazy. But it's good. Makes me laugh. As long as I'm away from it, it's okay. Now, today we've got an inspiring book. We've got a great writer who's written a book called Following Nellie Bly. Now, the guest is the author, Rosemary J. Brown. Thank you, Rosemary, for being here.
It's a real pleasure.
We'll see if you say that at the end of the show.
I'm already having fun.
Well, that's good. You know, I tell you what, the best compliment I get is when people can say it made them smile, or if they're listening to the show and they actually crack a smile, because, you know, we're talking about subjects that are really important, but I think it's important to make people smile and become a part of what we're talking about, not just be all uptight and formal, especially nowadays, you know.
Yes.
So this is great. This is a great book. Very inspiring. So let's tell the audience who you are. So first of all, Rosemary, how did you get into this story, and what drew you to Nellie Bly?
I'm a journalist myself. And I'm also an adventurer, not quite as adventurous as Nellie Bly, but I've always had a real respect for women adventurers, particularly the ones in Nellie Bly's time, in Victorian times, because they had much bigger obstacles to overcome to be able to travel, to be able to have adventures. So I was, I often, when I get a chance, maybe on a Sunday afternoon, just going, scrolling through the internet, looking up topics that I'm interested in, like the female adventurers. And I was doing that one Sunday afternoon, and literally Nellie Bly just about popped off of the screen right at me. And the more I got to know her, the more I was captivated by her, because she, in 1889, she traveled around the world alone with just a Gladstone bag, which sometimes in America and Canada it would be called a grip sack, but it's no bigger than a bolster cushion. And she traveled around the world on her own to beat the fictitious record of Phileas Fogg. Now, when I found that out, I thought that was pretty amazing. And I was also very shocked that I never heard of her or heard of this amazing accomplishment. The more I got to know her, the more I really liked her and was intrigued by her, because not only did she travel around the world faster than Phileas Fogg, but she's also is the inventor of investigative journalism. She pioneered investigative journalism back in 1888 when she went undercover in the New York Women's Insane Asylum to reveal the atrocities that were happening there. So the combination of the adventure and her strong link to journalism, I really just couldn't say no when I thought about maybe I could follow in her footsteps and bring her back to life again as an inspirational role model.
That's great. So now I would imagine this takes a while, because all of the things you said, for a young person today, they're not going to realize how much different the world was in 1889. And especially for a female, and being a journalist and stuff, it must have been a very difficult thing for Nellie to accomplish.
Well, it was extraordinary, because for starters, she had to get herself into a newsroom, because the newsrooms were male dominated. And they didn't really want women in there. If women were in there, they felt they couldn't drink and swear. And they also didn't think that women were capable of it. But Nellie proved them wrong. So another reason that I admire her is because she opened the door to journalism to women. She just barged right into that newsroom and took her place. So, yes, it was highly unusual to have female journalists. In that era, women really were pretty much seen and not heard, and they also weren't free to really even to travel the streets. She was in New York, but she wasn't really supposed to travel walk around New York on her own as a single female. She was supposed to have a companion. So you can imagine, here's this woman that bursts into a male-dominated newsroom and then says she's going to go around the world without a chaperone. It was pretty amazing. And also, back then, women's rights were not as advanced as they are today. We've still got a ways to go. But what I love about Nellie Bly is she didn't really talk about women's rights. She lived them. She just lived them. She just did what she wanted to do. She broke down barriers. She just sailed over obstacles and didn't let the status quo get in her way.
That must have been quite the battle. Because, I mean, at that time, if I'm right, so she wouldn't even be able to vote at that time, right?
Oh, no, she couldn't vote. And she did do some work with suffragists. She had a very interesting life that we can talk about later if there's time. But she didn't have many rights, but she didn't let that get in her way.
Well, what did she do then? Let's start with her then. So where did she come from, and where was she raised? Like, why was how did she end up being such a brave person and such a...
I'm so glad you asked me that, because as part of following in her footsteps around the world and tracing her journey, you know, through all the different continents, at the end of my journey, I went to her hometown where she was born. So I got the true story, which is very interesting. She was born in a place called Cochrane Mills in Pennsylvania, and it was named Cochrane after her father, Michael Cochrane. Her real name is Elizabeth Jane Cochrane. She had to have a byline name, Nellie Bly, because women weren't supposed to really be working on newspapers, and if they were, they would never use their own name. So she was born in Cochrane Mills, Pennsylvania. The family moved then to Apollo, Pennsylvania, just down the road, and Michael Cochrane, who had also been named a judge, built a beautiful mansion in Apollo to take his large family to, and you can still see it. It's there. But Sadly, shortly after moving to Apollo, Michael Cochran died, and he left his family destitute, and he left his wife in a very difficult predicament with you know, lots of children, including Nelly. And they say that the trauma that she went through and the determination she had to build the family back up gave her that spirit. So the family sunk into destitution. They went from living into a beautiful mansion into having to rent a small house and eventually having to move to Pittsburgh because it was so difficult in Apollo, knowing that the father had died. So she had a very tough upbringing, but that upbringing made her a strong, courageous woman, determined not to give in, and to also, it gave her a huge heart for people, other vulnerable people in similar situations, children that are ill, children that are orphans, the mothers, poor families, so that they say that the death of her father gave her the spirit to make things better for herself, her family, and for all the vulnerable people that she came in contact with.
So was that the fire that was lit, like her father dying? Was it, is that what kind of made, threw her into being not only a strong leader for herself and any family members, but in society? Like what made her go out and actually think she could jump into a reporter room, a newsroom? You know, like what made her go that far?
She was determined not to fall into the poverty trap. And, you know, she was going to make something of herself. She was going to make sure her family's was okay. And then that extended to, as I say, other people. And she was a campaigning journalist, and she changed the lives of very many people. But it was the fire, not really the grief of losing her father, but the frustration of suddenly finding themselves penniless. And she wasn't going to let that happen.
So what kind of work did she start with? Like where did she first go out and start making money?
Well, she used to do, she used to serve sometimes as a maid, but the way she got her break, which is very interesting, she was a voracious reader, and she was reading the local newspaper in Pittsburgh, and there was an article about women and that, you know, really saying that girls and women didn't have many rights and didn't deserve many rights. Couldn't they just be calm and stay at home and be housewives? And Nellie really took against this article, and she wrote a letter to the editor. And when the editor saw the letter and how well it was written, not so much because of the good grammar, but because of the passion and power behind it, he tried to find her, and he eventually did, and that's how she started her newspaper career.
I'd imagine, but it must have been tough on her in a lot of ways, not only it being a man's world and a lot of people not looking at her as an equal or any possibility of it, but also as a, did she ever try to have a relationship with anybody?
Oh, she got, you mean, yes, she was married in the end. There's not a lot of information about her personal relationships because she was more interested in her journalism that would help other people. But in the end, she did exactly what she said she wanted to do. She married a millionaire named Seaman. So her real, she's got quite a few names. So her pen name is Nellie Bly. The name she was born with was Elizabeth Jane Cochran, and her married name was Elizabeth Seaman.
Wow. Wow. See, she knows what she's doing. She's got...
She had a tenacity and a determination that really took her places. And I think maybe today we're losing a bit of that, even pre-pandemic, but certainly during the pandemic and post-pandemic, we we really have kind of our comfort zones, I believe, are shrinking. And that's certainly understandable, but I'm hoping that this book will be some type of an inspiration, maybe a revelation, that even in tough times, try to be brave and courageous. Try to follow your dreams.
I wonder if, do you think that each generation that comes out, but, you know, there's more rights, there's more of everything going on, but do you think that also spoils each generation that comes up because they don't really realize the struggles that people had to go through before in order for it to be that way today?
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad you asked me that because that's another part of the reason for the book, to let people know that this woman in 1889, and there were others too, and I've written about them, but not in the book, that they actually broke barriers, overcame obstacles to make making our lives easier. And the same here. I've got a daughter who was 19 when I did my round the world trip and abandoned her. But anyway, she's always been encouraged to vote because we know what women have to do in England and in America and all around the world to get the vote. I certainly didn't have to twist her arm because she would want to do that anyway, but I think we really need to uphold the giant strides that people have made for us. And if we focus on women, it's the ability to vote, it's the ability to even to have decent jobs. We still don't in this country get the same pay as men in England, but the workforce and careers are far more open than in Nellie Bly's day.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I like I said, I think a lot of people just take it for granted. Each generation a little bit more.
Yes, and I think that's right. And that's, as I say, another reason why I wanted to get Nellie Bly. I say I want to put her back on the map. I want young people, I want everybody to know what she achieved so they can realize what they can achieve. My main focus at the time when I went on the trip was to help my daughter understand what Nellie had done. And as a role model, I wanted Nellie Bly to be a role model because I think she's a good one, and not just for young women and not just for women. I think for men and everybody. And the stride she made, we can't take for granted, even, and maybe even especially in journalism. Journalism is far better with investigative reporting, where you can actually uncover corruption and get stories, people's voices out there that aren't usually heard. So that was a huge stride she made too, and that wasn't focusing on women. That's the journalism that affects everybody. Female journalists, male journalists, readers, television broadcasters.
What kind of stories?
Radio, of course.
Oh, well, no, we're terrible. We don't do anything. We're the last insanity, actually. But
England, we have great radio. Some people don't do anything, you know, don't have any other media because our radio is so good.
Well, there you go. Then we're heading over there right now.
Come on, you're very welcome.
Yeah, we're on the plane now. No COVID. What kind of writing did she do? Like, did you look at a lot of her stories and reporting? And do you have any sort of stories that you thought were really, really well done that stuck out for you?
Oh yes. Well, her. Stories that I mentioned earlier, that she spent 10 days in a madhouse on Blackwell's Island, which is now Roosevelt Island. And while she was there, she had to pretend that she was mad, and she did such a good job that she was immediately admitted into the asylum, and they weren't going to let her out. And her boss was Joseph Pulitzer of the Pulitzer Prize, and he had to send lawyers in to get her out. So of course, that story to me is iconic. It really was the beginning of investigative journalism, and it really made a difference because after her stories broke, there were sweeping reforms in insane asylums and huge changes. There's still, of course, changes that need to be made, but it really did rock the nation when this information came out. So, of course, that's going to be one of the stories that I would find the most meaningful. But she also, the stories I liked the best were the stories that she did campaigning for people that were for prisoners, for people in workhouses, for people that were in factories and poorly paid, for mothers that didn't have, for families that didn't have fathers, all kinds of crusading journalism, which is, I do a little bit myself, with asylum seekers and refugees here. But so those stories for me are my favorites. But you'll never guess, when I was preparing to go on my round the world trip to follow Nellie Bly, would you believe that the New York World, the microfiche, is on file at the British Library? So I was able to get every story that was written during that trip and a little bit before and after. So I read all of the stories that that she wrote for her trip, and then there were several foreign correspondents for the New York World, and I could get their stories too, right in the British Library, walking distance from my house.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing what you
find. Oh, I was thrilled. Really thrilled. I've got them all on my computer because not only could you read them, you could get them photocopied.
Yeah, so we've moved a long way. Yeah, yes. You probably wonder, what would someone like Nellie Bly, and what would she accomplish in today's day if she was alive, do you think?
I'm very sure that she would still be doing campaigning journalism, and that that she would be fighting for change for the underdog, for the people that don't have voices, for the vulnerable, for those that are forgotten by society. And now she'd have a much larger platform because there's the social media, there's television, there's, you know, all kinds of ways to get those messages across. And it would not be fake news. It would be authentic news.
Yeah. Well, she wouldn't be on Twitter, or would she be?
I really don't know if she would be on Twitter, but somebody would be tweeting her stories, that's for sure.
That would be interesting.
She might have had a Facebook page, because I think she was quite good at promoting herself.
Oh, well, there you go. Then she probably would. Maybe Instagram, she'd be.
Yeah, she wasn't much of a photographer. She forgot to take a camera on her round-the-world journey.
Oh. Especially back then, because it's not like you can just look online and
no. So no. That was one of the biggest regrets of her trip, not taking a camera. But I took a camera, so I have lots of photographs.
So let's talk about that trip now. So what made her do this trip around the world? Maybe explain that for listeners.
Yes, of course. She was already working for the New York World, for Pulitzer, and every week she had to have a meeting with her editor, and she needed to bring forth feature story ideas. And the night that she decided on wanting to beat the record of Phileas Fogg, she was tossing and turning in her bed. She had no idea what she was going to say to the editor. She was very stressed out. She didn't know what to do. She couldn't sleep. And suddenly she said, "Oh, I wish I was at the other end of the world." And then she said, "Hey, wait a minute. Maybe I could be. Phileas Fogg went around the world. Maybe, just maybe, if I could do it faster than him, I could write a really good story." And so she finally fell asleep. She woke up the next morning. She went straight down to the docks where all the shipping offices were, and she did all the work with timetables and discovered that she thought she could circle the world faster than Phileas Fogg. and she went to her editor with the timetables, with the proposal, and the editor said, oh, that's a fantastic proposal, great idea. But only a man could do that, Nellie. You can't go. You'd have to have a chaperone. You'd have so many trunks full of clothes that it would slow you down. It's not something that a woman could do. Well, you can imagine from what I've told you about Nellie already, she was really angry because they also said that there were two editors. It's just impossible, Nellie. You can't do it. Nellie Bly hated the word impossible. So she said, she looked at them and she said, fine, send a man. Let the man go around the world. I'm going to the competing newspaper and let's just see who wins this race.
Wow.
They knew she was right. They had no choice but to say, if anybody does this trip, it'll be you, Nellie. But then they waited almost a year and finally called her into the office and said, can you leave on your round-the-world trip the day after tomorrow? And Nellie Bly said, I could leave this minute if you like. And so 72 hours later, she was on a ship with one small bag, one traveling outfit that she wore for the whole 72 days. And she was on her way on the SS Augusta Victoria. She'd never been on a boat before. And there she was, setting off to travel around the world to break the record that had never been broken, even though it was fictitious. And she actually circled the world faster than anybody ever had before.
You know, it's interesting. When you say chaperone, maybe explain that, because I don't think a lot of listeners that are only 20, 25 years old really get what you mean by when you say she can't without a chaperone. They're probably going, she's of age, why couldn't she go? Right? You know what I mean? Like in their mind, they're thinking. So maybe explain the importance of what a chaperone was.
Sure. In Nellie's day, in the late 1880s, women did not travel alone. They didn't even travel alone on the streets of New York City. They had to have a chaperone, someone to look after them, because they weren't capable of looking after themselves. That's what society said. And Nellie Bly was having nothing to do with that. And so not only did she travel alone in her own neighborhood, in her own city, in her own state? She went all the way around the world alone.
Now, during her travels, I read that she met Jules Verne.
Oh, do
you know anything
yes.
of that interaction?
Yes, that was really wonderful. And I went, of course, because I traveled in her footsteps, I went to Jules Verne's house, which is now a wonderful museum, and it's the very same house that Nellie went to, and there's still traces of her there. They've put little...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Framed papers of how she described the house. They also occasionally have actors and actresses come in and reenact the meeting between Jules and Honorine Byrne and Nellie Bly. So, yes, Nellie discovered when she arrived in Southampton in London, which is still to this day a big port, that Jules Verne had invited her to visit him in Amiens in northern France. She thought, oh, how could I possibly say no, but how can I take a risk like that at the very beginning of my trip? Because it's going to take... They did the calculations. It was going to be 180 miles out of her way. It was going to involve two nights without sleep. And there were 4 extra train trips, which, okay, in today's world, big whoop. You know, what's 180 miles? But in her day, that was a big journey. Anyway, she decided that she would do it. She could not resist the opportunity to meet Jules Verne. And so she did. She went for 2 nights without sleep, did all the extra traveling. Jules and Honorine Verne, Honorine his wife, were at the station to meet her. I was at the station as well. And although none of them spoke each other's language, Nellie spoke no French and they spoke no English, they became fast friends. There was some type of connection between them. And she only really had 30 minutes in their home. But in that time, there was a friendship that developed. And she just before it was time to leave, she asked if she could go and see Jules Verne's study. And Honorine, his wife, led them up the stairs with candlelight. And when she saw his study, she was astounded because it's very small and very modest. It was smaller than her study at home. And she was very impressed with Jules Verne. She liked his smile. She liked his energy. And she particularly liked Honorine Verne and their dog. They had a dog named Follette. And so she had a fabulous 30-minute meeting with them, which took her way, way off course. But just like all the risks she took, it was a triumph. And to this day, her visit with Jules Verne in 1889, lives on in the Maison Jules Verne in Amiens, France.
What was that like, for you guys following her around the world? Did you do it the exact same way she did, or?
Well, I didn't take my daughter to around the world. She was at university. But I did take her to France because it's not very far from England. So both my daughter and my husband accompanied me to Jules Verne's home. But after that, I had to leave my daughter at university and my husband at home. Luckily, they were relatively supportive. I mean, my husband was very supportive. My daughter really didn't want me to abandon her and didn't think that I should be staying in hostels and doing this, you know, not first class, because she liked the idea of staying in posh hotels. Well, that's not what I was And one of the funnest things in the book is I actually included the letter that she wrote to me before I left, and she said, you know, maybe we can do this together, but I want to do it first class. And she said, "Mommy, remember, if it's not in a packet, don't smoke it. If the lid's off, don't drink it." And she said, be interested, not interesting. So in other words, listen to other people's stories. Don't just tell your own. So I think her letter to me in the book is quite sweet.
She was your chaperone.
Yeah, well, as far as friends, anyway. Yeah, she was my chaperone, my virtual chaperone.
What do you think the biggest thing you learned from this whole doing this book and following Nellie Bly? What did you take away that's had the most impact, you might say?
The adventure. I love adventures, and the fact that I could do it, that I traveled alone, like Nellie Bly, with a case which was maybe a couple of inches bigger than hers, so very, very small case. I had a rucksack with wheels, which was very nice. But like her, I couldn't afford to have baggage. What if it got lost? I needed hand baggage, so I had one bag. Luckily, clothes today are much lighter, so I didn't have to wear the same travel outfit the whole time, although I did tend to wear a khaki skirt and a t-shirt and a bandana most of the time, but I had choices of my clothing. So the biggest thing that I took away from that adventure is the fact that I could do it, that I could travel around the world on my own in safety, meeting different people, having different experiences, and tracking her as closely as I could. So that for me was, it felt kind of like if I could do that, I could do anything.
Eugenio, what do you think it felt like for her and in her mind, though she was a strong woman, because I'd imagine at the time she wasn't married, she didn't have a family, so she wasn't necessarily feeling support like you get from your family. And back then, probably everyone looked at her in a negative way, especially a woman and no chaperone and traveling and doing all these things. I'm sure she was a lot of talk. What do you think it was for? How do you think it was for her in her mind? What do you think?
Well, she is such a determined person that there weren't very many moments when she wasn't just set on winning the race. She was obsessed with winning this race, and she said she'd rather arrive home dead than arrive home late. So most all of the time she was just focusing on getting from one place to another. And when she got delayed, it was, if ships weren't arriving on time, she was frustrated beyond belief, very, very frustrated. So what she got out of it, I guess, is the fact that she could actually do it, and she did it, and she liked the fame that came with it. She liked that very much. And also, I didn't tell you this, but she also wrote a little book about her journey, which is what I used to follow it, and along with the newspaper articles and other books by other writers. Her book is called Around the World in 72 Days. And she, at the end, she says that she's grateful to all the wonderful people that helped her, the kindness that they shared with her. And she said they form a ring around the world. So she felt, I think like me, she felt a great sense of the wonder of humanity. And in fact, before she left, she was told that she should carry a gun, that she should take a gun with her. And she said, absolutely not. I expect to be greeted by the world in the same way that I'm going to greet the world. So I guess I've said quite a bit, but the biggest thing that she got out of the trip was actually winning the race, making some points about women, you know, showing that women could actually do this alone, and the fame that came with that.
Well, you only need a gun through the States. That's the rest of the world, she's okay. But, you know.
I'd also like you to know that one of the main reasons I wanted to do the travel was to get Nellie Bly back on the map, to get her better known, because nobody had heard of her, and I hadn't, and I was a journalist. And I have to say that there's been a lot of, I think I have, not just me, but I think there's a lot more people are aware of her, partly because there's more of a focus now, particularly on International Women's Day, on strong and powerful women. But also, Google did a doodle of her called, on her 151st birthday, I wrote to Google and said, how about a doodle on Nellie Bly? And so she was, boy, that she traveled around the world in 24 hours on the Google Doodle. And then I guess one of the most exciting things for me is that on Blackwell Island, which is now Roosevelt Island, they are actually creating a very, very special installation honoring Nellie Bly, and it's called the Girl Puzzle. And it's called the Girl Puzzle because that was the name of the first story she ever wrote for the Pittsburgh newspaper. And that story was about rights for girls and rights for women. And so the Girl Puzzle installation, I guess it probably would have been finished by now, but we've had the pandemic. But please keep your eye out on that, because it's going to take up quite a bit of the island, and it's being sculpted by Prometheus Art by Amanda Matthews, and it's I can send you a picture of it. It's going to be so neat. It's got Nellie Bly, and it's going to be saying that Nellie Bly told the stories of many people, and now Nellie Bly's story is being told. And Nellie Bly's story was a lot about, as I said, dealing with, working with vulnerable people. And this installation will reflect that as well. It'll tell the stories of people, you know, people that tend to be invisible, that don't have a voice. And so look forward to that. I don't know exactly when it's going to come to be, but to me, that was almost the culmination of my travels, to know that something like that was going to be installed on the very island where Nellie pioneered investigative journalism.
Did you get any surprises from doing this race and this research and all that on Nellie Bly?
Oh, surprises?
Yes,
I did. I did, because there were certain things that happened on my trip that made me think that maybe Nellie Bly was with me, because I got caught in a typhoon in Hong Kong, a very strong typhoon, level 8, and I was supposed to leave the next day to go to one of the most exciting places that Nellie visited, which was Canton, China, which is now called Guangzhou. And if I couldn't get to Guangzhou, to Canton, within 24 hours, I wouldn't be able to go at all, because I had a visa, and the visa was very tight. Anyway, so I'm stuck in this typhoon, thinking, oh, for goodness sake, everything, the airports were shut down, even the stock exchange shut down, and I thought, what am I going to do? And I thought, could I do this? I can stay here, I can do this. And then I finally said, well, what would Nellie Bly do? And I said, I know what Nellie Bly would do. And I put on my raincoat, and I walked out the door, and I got myself to the train station, not knowing if the trains to Canton, China would be running from Hong Kong, but would you believe they were? I had the whole station to myself, which was great. I had no problem getting on the train, going through immigration. It was an empty train. It was an empty train, but But would you believe, when I went to find my seat, someone was sitting in the seat next to me, who was very nice. We had a nice time. And I just happened to look above where the racks are, where they keep the luggage. And would you believe, he had an exact replica of Nellie Bly's traveling case. It was a Gladstone bag.
Wow.
I just looked at him, and I guess I went white, and he said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "Is that your bag?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "What?" He said, "Yes, that's my bag. So what's the big deal?" I said, "Well, that's the exact replica of Nellie Bly's case." And I just happened to have a photograph of Nellie Bly's case that I kept on my computer, and I showed it to him, and he couldn't believe it either. So, me.
Well, there you go. You never know.
And there were just times when things maybe weren't going the way I hoped they would, and somehow it felt like perhaps she paved the way for me a little bit. And even to this day, there were no plans to write a book. I wrote a blog, and it wasn't until 5 years after I returned that I was approached by a publisher to write a book. And I also could possibly attribute that to Nellie Bly, because she wanted a book about her. And I was the one that was going to write it.
And you're going to write it.
I wrote it, and it's done. Hardest thing I've ever done, but it was also the most rewarding.
Yeah, usually the hardest things are the best for you, you know, yep, at the end. That's the big question here. So at the end of the day, someone goes out and buys Following Nellie Bly, your book, reads it. What is it you want them to get out of the book? What is the most important thing for you? Or is there a subtext that you want people to pick up other than, you know, the story itself?
Yes. And that's why I did the trip, and that's why I wrote the book. I want them to be inspired. I want them to be inspired to follow their own dreams, to have their own adventures. They don't have to be adventures traveling around the world. They can be an adventure sleeping in a tent in your backyard. I mean, whatever adventure means to you or whoever reads the book, I just hope that the book will make them step further out of their comfort zone than they would normally, that they will be inspired to do something they've always wanted to do, or to realize that actually taking risks really can pay off. Of course, then you have to be sure you're safe, but just showing that you can actually achieve your dreams.
Yeah, it's true. Now, do you have a website of your own dedicated to your book or to Nellie Bly? Or
yes, it's called Following Nellie Bly, and it's Nellie Bly 125, because I followed her 120 exactly 125 years after she did her trip. I did the trip, so it's Nellie Bly. It's WordPress, Nellie Bly 125.
Yeah, that's great. You know, we'll have that up on our website too, and people can find it that listen to. They can just do one click, or if they need to come back, they'll find it.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. I did it myself, so it's not, there are no bells and whistles, but I'm hoping that it would be okay to put a link to this interview on it.
Oh, of course. Of course. How was it writing? Did you write some of this during the COVID, or was that sort of a struggle for you, or did it?
The kind of sad thing is that I've kind of socially isolated for about a year writing the book, really focusing on it, and then COVID hit, so I've been in self-isolation. Well, not really. I've got my family, but for quite some time, and it was a real, I had the same determination as Nellie Bly to write the book. I've never written a book, but I am a journalist, so I believe I know how to write, and I hope my readers agree. But I really had to focus on it to get it done. And so that was another lesson for me, that if you really do keep at it, day after day after day. And even if you don't feel like writing, if you just keep plugging away, it'll come. It'll come. And you'll have the chapter that you wanted to have. It'll take a while, but you can get there. And it's, so that's another lesson that I've learned from writing this book.
Have you seen that series, the Netflix series, The Alienist?
No.
Oh, watch it. Look for
okay.
it. Really, because it's about this time period. And though The Alienist, of course, was a person trying to be a psychiatrist, which is not what they called them back then, because they didn't consider them real doctors, you know. But he's working with a strong female who's decided to be a journalist in the same idea. It's very well done, putting in all the parts of what went on in the 1800s. That's why I suggest it. It's right up there. So.
Oh, I'll definitely take your advice. Thank you.
It fits right in with the book. So it's amazing. So what do you got planned next? Are you going to do a follow-up or do something different? Or is this a one-time-only book type thing?
Oh, no, I hope not, because now I learned so much about writing books. I'd really like to put that knowledge to use. And I discovered another amazing female adventurer in this country, in England. Her name was Celia Fiennes, and in the 17th century, she rode horseback to every county in England. Now that, again, might not sound like much, but there were hardly any roads. And again, she didn't go totally alone, but she was the leader. She was a woman of means, so she had a couple of servants with her and a dog. But she went, she traveled 5,000 miles to visit every county in England because she was curious and she wanted to learn about what was happening there. She was very interested in industry. She was interested in local foods, which is a very trendy thing right now in this country, local foods, you know, local recipes. She and she rode across the Lake District. I mean, she fell off her horse many times, and she was accosted by highwaymen, but with a spirit like Nellie Bly, she saw off the highwaymen. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do with her, because I can't ride across England 5,000 miles on a horse. But it'll be partly an iron horse, a train, and buses, and also maybe more of a biography, although there's not even a photograph of her, of course, or a portrait, because we're talking about the 1660s till about the 1740s, so it's a very long time ago. But I think Nellie Bly would approve.
How long did it take you to put together the book, then, in all?
Probably about a year and a half. Writing it. I had a blog to start with, so when I was first approached by the publisher, they said, well, when do you think you could have it done? I said, oh, I'll have it done in 3 months. Oh, boy. What a because you're authors, too. You know.
Yeah.
You know that you really have to put your all into it for it to be the book that you want it to be. So, you know, when I said, well, no, that wasn't very realistic, they allowed me to extend the deadline. But it took a lot more work than I ever dreamed, polishing the words, trying to reach deep inside to be able to replicate the way I felt or the music or the food or the scenery or picturing Nellie. Where, you know, picturing Nellie in Canton, picturing Nellie in Hong Kong, it was hardest maybe to picture her in Japan, because she spent a lot of time, well, she spent 5 days in Japan, and quite a bit of that was in Yokohama, and Yokohama was wiped out by an earthquake after she'd been there, so it was hard to find her there. I have to say, it was also very hard to find her in New York, where she had her career, although the place that's probably the most meaningful, aside from what's left of the asylum on Roosevelt Island, is Woodlawn Cemetery, where she's buried. And I was able to visit her grave and put 12 white roses on her grave.
Well, that's amazing. That's great. It sounds like quite the journey and a very important story, very important idea. Because, like we were saying beforehand, I think that it's good for the younger generation to become aware of really what others had gone through so that they could have the life that they have today.
That's a really important message. And also for people not so young, I did this trip when I was 60. So, you know, don't... We don't have to become couch potatoes.
Oh, come on.
You want to be a couch potato?
No. But that's a good thing. Do you think that people today, this is kind of a harder question to, but is there women today that you put in the same category?
As Nellie Bly?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, and I love writing about them. There are contemporary female adventurers that have skied across the North Pole who, you know, we have lots of people, women, and, well, of course, men, but we hear about the men, but we don't hear about the women. And so one of my goals is to get the female adventurers from the past, but also contemporary female adventures on the map. So again, as role models, you know, they are mothers, they are professionals, they are all kinds of interesting women who are going out there doing adventures that seem impossible.
Yeah, and we don't care about the men anyway, right?
Yeah. Well, I do, but I do think that they get more attention, and I do think. Yeah. In order to inspire particularly young women, that they need to know about the Victorian travelers or even like Celia Fiennes back in the 17th century, and also the contemporary ones that we do hear more about now, particularly with things like International Women's Day and features on courageous people. But that's something that I'm still pursuing.
Well, that's great. The book is fantastic. The book we're talking about is Following Nellie Bly, and our guest has been the author, Rosemary J. Brown. Thank you for being on our show.
Well, I've had a great time, and I hope that people do enjoy the book and do pick up the inspiration and a sense of travel whatever their dreams or goals are, that maybe just that by seeing what Nellie did, that and against all odds, really, that they'll find that as an inspiration and be able to achieve what they would like to achieve.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.